Okay, we'll get started right on time with our next panel. Several of the speakers over the last several days have talked to you, you know, have mentioned the lobbying community, so it's fitting that we have a session with lobbyists. They are, there are several different parts of the lobbying community, and we have representatives or representation of each part today. Rick Eich is with the Success Group and is kind of representing the lobbyists who are broad-based and work for clients and things. And he'll explain it better than I have. Carolyn Ramsey is the manager of government and community relations for Honda of America. So it's more one company, obviously. And Cheryl Sublers with the County Commissioners Association of Ohio. You'll, in whatever like specialty, if you specialize here, or whatever bills you vote on, you'll encounter the local government associations frequently. So she can speak to that. So I'll turn it over to them. I think Rick is going to start.
Good morning, everyone. And first, I want to congratulate all the new members and their families. It's a great sacrifice and honor to be serving the people of Ohio here in the Ohio General Assembly. And you'll make some wonderful friendships around the Capitol, as I have over 40 years of working around the State House. But I'd also like to thank and recognize the Legislative Service Commission. You know, they're really the unsung heroes that do the work of the General Assembly and for the people of Ohio in such an extraordinary way, with amazing technical expertise, but more importantly, integrity that keeps this process moving in the right direction. It's always a great honor for me to speak at these LSC programs. I've been invited over the years and have many times spoken to the Legislative Service Commission Fellowship Program, which you'll all run into fellows around the Capitol every year. They bring in 22 young people to come work at the Capitol, and I happened to come to that program about 41 years ago, about 2 weeks ago, and sat in an orientation. I was in the second intern group. Governor Kasich was an intern the year before myself. And every year they asked me to come to speak to the LSC fellow orientation. I joke now, after 40 years, why do you bring an old man to speak to these young people? And then I tell them that my wife and I were the first LSC interns, as they called it in those days, to marry 34 years ago. So I said, there may be something here other than your job, and you'll never know, that'll change your life. And it certainly changed mine. My wife worked both in the House and the Senate on staff as well. My background, I'd say, I came here after graduate school in 75, worked in the House, was hired by the Ohio State Medical Association as a young lobbyist. And in those days, it really was the good old boys in a hotel that stood at this property here, where there was a bar and everybody would congregate there, and you didn't go in the door because it was the good old boys. There were very few women, but the world slowly changed, and I slowly got into the circle and have been hanging around for the past 40 years. Our firm is, after that I went to work as a government affairs director for what's now Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield, and then set up my own business in 89, and been with the Success Group, merged with them in 2000. The Success Group is a multi-client lobbying firm. We represent a multiple of different clients in very varied areas. I have five folks that work with us. All of us are former staffers around the Capitol or in the federal government. You'll see us around the State House a lot. We're much like a law firm. Each of us have different areas of specialty. I'll give you some examples of the clients we work with. Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield, AT&T, the Buckeye State Sheriff's Association, First Energy Company, Children's Hospital of Dayton, Cleveland Indians, Flexible Pavements of Ohio, which are the asphalt manufacturers, Hewlett-Packard, Norfolk Southern Railroad, the Hard Rock Racino up in the Cleveland area, the Regional Income Tax Agency, which deals with about 250 local governments collecting their muni taxes, United Airlines, Waste Management, the Ohio Wholesale Beer and Wine Association, the Ohio Council of Behavioral Health and Family Services, and Ohio Provider Resource Network, which does MRDD care, and a number of other clients as well. You know, there's a lot of lobbyists around in Ohio. There are about 1,600 organizations that have representation, and there are probably a couple of thousand lobbyists, of which maybe a few hundreds you'll see around the Capitol on a day-to-day basis. Often lobbyists are sort of whipping boys of pundits or in movies like Thank You for Not Smoking. But little's attention's given to what we really do on a day-to-day basis. Whether it's helping staff draft legislation, providing members with quality policy or political information, or just being good listeners, lobbyists must build and maintain relationships, and if they do, they'll succeed in advancing the policy objectives of their clients in a give-and-take process that you all be working in. We often try to pass legislation, kill legislation, but one of the most important things, I think, is to be what I call a constructive lobbyist. How do you find that middle ground of compromise where you work with people in constructive lobbying? Credibility is the only thing we have in trade in this business. If your word is not good, everybody's going to know that I misrepresented something to you on an issue. Your colleagues may have had that experience with any one of us in the lobbying profession. You're going to hear that in your rooms with your colleagues. So we have to be true to our word and true to our clients and try to advocate the best we can. On the other hand, sometimes the process gets a little tense and difficult, and people will misrepresent, and you got to be careful because our word is our bond. Although lobbyists in practice use a lot of these strategies to kill, pass, and amend bills, a big part of the job is lobbying our own clients. We're working on legislation. A lot of our clients may not understand the nuances of the politics of the day or the policy of the day, and it's important for us to explain to them and lobby them to educate them to move to a position where we can come to a compromise solution on a given issue and get them to better understand a process that we live with every day. Sometimes having what I call good access to bad news. Some of my best friends in the General Assembly vote against me consistently, but I always have communication with them. We share information, and it's important for me to go back to that client with the bad news as soon as I can so they can plan their business or their organization's interests based upon decisions that you and the General Assembly make. Lobbyist work is part science, it's part art. Many of us are trained in the law or economics or political science. Others come here with specialty expertise from the industry that they've worked in to come to work with the government. Many of us are former staff members. But they all bring a understanding of policy and government decision making. They know how to get things done. They know how to influence the changes and make legislation flow through the system. Successful lobbying campaigns are multifaceted anymore. Knocking on your door is just a small part of it. A good lobbyist needs to understand the policy issues on both sides of the issue, explain why that policy position is right or wrong, and the more sophisticated lobbyists will engage new things like social media, the regular media, third-party advocates, doing outreach in your communities. I like to say the process has changed. 30 years ago, it was High and Broad Street to Main Street. Anymore, it's important that it's Main Street to High and Broad Street. And so we need to reach out to our constituents in the community because so many members will say, Rick, I agree with you, but I'm not hearing anything from home. Rick, I agree with you, but this is very important in my community because of this, so I can't go with you on that. So your constituents and what we, you for you to hear from them at home only reinforces the messages that I may bring to you in Columbus and gives me more credibility when you say, you know what, I was hearing that from my local Chamber of Commerce or from my mental health and developmental disability providers about an individual issue. It's very important. The other thing that's important is not just what we do in a committee hearing room. It's staying engaged through the entire process, both inside and outside of the halls of the General Assembly, where we have interested party meetings and bring people together. You're going to find many of the lobbyists, we've known each other for many years, and I've had some tough issues over 40 years that we couldn't resolve until they brought my friend who worked for the optometrists, and I represented the Medical Association, and those two groups couldn't get along. We would get in a room with a couple of members and find that middle ground that we then had to go back and lobby our own clients to come to an equitable solution that allowed the people of Ohio to get the best public policy out there. An important aspect is personal relationship between members and staff in the Ohio General Assembly and lobbyists. Obviously, lunches, dinners, social occasions can be constructive and are valuable in building trust and furthering the prospects of the development of good public policy. Friendships between legislators, staff, and lobbyists can provide a higher quality of deliberation on relevant issues where we get to know one another. Developing these personal relationships with lobbyists does not pose a threat to the integrity of the process. But actually, lobbyists can serve as sounding boards for you on legislative ideas or strategic plans. You know, I've seen many of these bills over 40 years, and here's the mistake a member made in 96, and maybe here's an opportunity for you to maybe tweak something a little bit. So developing those personal relationships where we get to know each other a little bit better. Oftentimes when I'm out with members, I don't talk business with them. I talk about my family, their family. I get to know their community, what their businesses were, how they think. And then we can have when we do disagree, we have a much more civil conversation and can maybe respect one another a little bit more and try to get to that, again, that middle ground, which we also often deal with around here. It's important to do that. And it's important for you as legislators. I was going to make one more point about that is I'll go the next morning to their office because I needed to talk about something that night at dinner. And I didn't. And I'll go to their office the next morning and they'll say, why didn't you say something last night at dinner? Because I knew that you had an office. That's where we talk business, and we go from there. Not to say that you don't have business dinners, but I tend to not like to talk business, maybe general politics, interesting things at dinners with members, but not deal specifically with business a lot of times when you want to get to know people a little bit better. But this concept, developing friendships, I feel very strongly about this, is even maybe more important for you as legislators with your own colleagues. Regardless of your political party, your opinions on a specific issue, it ultimately enhances your working relationship with your colleagues. Helps us as lobbyists when you have members that know how to work with each other as a personal relationship and a friendship. It's something that I believe and has observed has been slowly lost over the last 40 years, where members tend to not have the personal relationships with their colleagues. I think there's some members around here, I'll introduce them to one of their own colleagues, and I'm like stunned. So anything you can do to enhance your relationships on a personal level with your colleagues, I think will help you do your job as a legislator and serve your constituents. The process obviously has become more adversarial. Some people just don't socialize anymore. You got to get past that. You got to get to know their families a little bit, get to know their backgrounds, just like I like to do meeting with members. Many years ago, we'd go to a restaurant, we'd get a table for eight, and three Republicans would walk in, and then two Democrats walk in. We said, come on, sit down. And we fill that table up with people, and we'd sit and talk about odds and ends, maybe some politics, maybe some things of interest to everybody. But there was much more of a collegial atmosphere, and I'd encourage you to do that with your own colleagues. I'll give you a quick story about a member who is a member of leadership now. When she came to office about 4 years ago, she said she was not going to meet with any lobbyists. She tells the story. I was with her the other evening. She told the story to some colleagues, and she said that I told my staff I'm not meeting with any lobbyists. And she said, but these guys from the success group keep calling all the time. They keep calling and want to meet with me. And somebody says, oh, you should go meet with them. They're good guys. So we went and had lunch one day together. We didn't talk business. We talked about families. We got to know each other. Now we're very dear friends. We've worked on some very difficult issues together. And she loves telling that story, and it's a great vignette of how you can slowly, you can be careful, you know, you don't want to lay your body out in front of the train because sometimes around here you can get run over. On the other hand, I'd encourage you to try to begin to develop those relationships both with lobbyists and your colleagues. And on the subject of legislative ethics and lobbying ethics, I'll take a moment to talk about that. I have been around a long time, and I was here in a different day, and as we call it sometimes, the good old days. There wasn't always everything good, but some of the things as you watch this process we all work in now, especially after this last election, you wonder where the civility's gone. And I was around the days where the ethics reforms came in, where there were some greedy people, both lobbyists and legislators, who took advantage of the process. I fortunately was on the other side of them and fought them, and eventually the authorities got them, and they're gone. But we did have the ethics law changes that have kind of put a damper on some of the socializing we do. But I want to encourage all of you to reach out to the Joint Legislative Ethics Committee Office and the Office of the Legislative Inspector General, Tony Bledsoe. I found over the years that anytime at our firm we have a question about anything, whether it's a client wanting to have an event or a meeting that may be going on, anything that might happen, an expenditure, if you call Tony Bledsoe and ask the question in advance, you're going to get the right answer and not be sorry later you wished you would have asked. They've done a great job of cleaning up this process. This process, in many ways, is much better, although sometimes the public and the media don't see that compared to some of the things that I saw go on over the past 40 years. And then I want to finally mention something that I feel particularly strongly about on how you do your day-to-day business and what you use lobbyists for. As a former staffer, the most important thing I can do to you is help you with your constituent work. You're going to be doing a lot of public policy work. You're going to have a lot of commitments in your community. But there are going to be these phone calls that come to your office, either the smallest problem or the biggest problem. I love to use the example of I represent Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield. So many times we'll get a call from a legislator's office, and they'll say, I got a call from a mother. Their child's in the hospital. The doctor filed the proper paperwork for the pre-authorization for this very serious procedure that needs to be done, but Anthem rejected it. And this is something you need to address right away, and you need to find somebody like me who represents Anthem. You go to that JLIC list and find out who represents that company, and you pick up the phone and you call them. And then I go to the company and can cut through some of the red tape and find out we made a mistake. The doctor didn't fill out the proper paperwork and was giving the legislator or the legislator's staff misinformation. That doesn't matter. The fact is that child's in the hospital, and we need to find out a way to work through the process. And another example, I'm working, I represent waste management. We've got a situation in Dayton where landfills had an environmental breach. I reach out to those legislators to give them the information because the community's up in arms about it. They need to respond to their constituents and know that the director of the EPA just filed findings and orders that we're working to rectify this problem, and here's exactly what we're doing. I had a problem a few weeks ago where there's an economic development project in a community where there's some dispute over purchasing some land from the railroad. And it's multiple jobs in a small community, very important. Well, the legislator calls me, I get a hold of the railroad. Now, it wasn't quite like the member had been told by the constituent, but that's okay. The fact is, this is an important project to a community. How can we get the railroad and the community leaders together to make that project work? So please use the lobbyists as a sounding board for your constituent work. They'll save your staff a lot of time. They'll be very helpful in that. That's often lost in this big game of lobbying and all you do. Some of it's the day-to-day work that we did as staffers at the State House. And if you don't know somebody, if you ask another lobbyist, they'll probably know, and that happens to me all the time, they'll say, hey, I got a problem with so-and-so company, who should I call? Well, call Sue or call John. They'll be able to help you. So those are my thoughts today. Congratulations on all of you. We really look forward to working with you. There's some great people around here. We're all still a little bit numb from the election, regardless of political party. The whole thing was exhausting. But we'll move on. I can't wait to start the new year. And thanks again.
Well, good morning. Thanks, Rick. Greetings, and on behalf of Honda, congratulations on your election. I really look forward to working with each of you as you get into your new roles. Again, I'm Caroline Ramsey. I'm the manager of government and industry relations with Honda of America, and we're in Marysville, Ohio. I am really honored to be here today for a number of reasons. One, first and foremost, it's a chance for me to meet you and get to know you a little bit and welcome you into your new roles, and also to be among my fellow lobbyists from the lobbying community. It's always good to see them, and as Rick was saying, many of us have been in and around Capitol Square for many years, so that's always good. And finally, but also very special, as an alumna also of LSC, it's an honor to participate in anything that they do and really have quality programs, whether it's for the new member orientation or the new legislative fellows. I was talking to Kathy about, like, it's almost the same program but different audiences, but both of those are very important, I think, to ground the newcomers to Capitol Square and introduce them to a lot of the players that they'll be working with. In fact, when I was a LSC intern back in the day, I think you spoke to my class too, so we were very impressed, and it was very helpful, and it's a very good foundation, I think, for anything in state government and beyond. I really credit that opportunity that I had. After I was an LSC intern, I worked as a staffer about 6 years total. I was in the Ohio Senate, and then I was a staffer with a commission at the time of the commission is the Ohio Hispanic Affairs Commission. I was their legislative liaison. I had worked for a member in the Senate whose district was heavily Hispanic in Lorain County, and so that was kind of a nice merge into that role. And from there I went to Honda, so I've been at Honda 18 years now in my role. And for us, it is more than just only state government focused, state government relations focused. I also do local government issues, work a lot with our county commissioners across our plant counties where we're located, which I'll talk about in a minute, work with townships and municipalities and all of our chambers of commerce and so forth. So it's a much broader role, and we're spread pretty thin. Many of you come from districts that have that include manufacturing and probably understand the importance of manufacturing. Several of you may also have a Honda supplier in your districts. We have across Ohio, we're major operations are in four different counties. So we're in Union County, Logan County, Shelby County to the west, and Miami County. So our the House districts, currently they are Representative Palanda and Senator Burke for Marysville operations, and then Representative Vitale, and now currently Senator Faber, but now will be Senator Huffman for some of our operations. And a lot of those members know many of our facts and figures, but a lot of people are surprised to learn about Honda's operations or the extent of Honda's operations. And when I was starting out as an intern back in 1989, that's when Honda opened its East Liberty auto plant, which was the second of our auto plants. So that was big news, but we were talking earlier as I came in how quickly time has gone by, because we started out in 1979 with just a small motorcycle operation. We had 64 associates, and then, you know, really within a 20-year span, we opened four plants and grew to 13,000 associates. So we have, that's our direct hire for Honda associates throughout those manufacturing plants, and we also have a major R&D center right there in Union County, about 45 minutes from here. They do a lot of the product design for this market. So we're really proud of that. And then in Miami County, we have a Midwest consolidation center that provides all the OEM parts that go to the dealer network for anything that vehicles need when they're brought in by customers. So that's a major operation that serves this whole region. And altogether, people are surprised that we have about $10 billion in investments since we began here. And we produce 700,000 cars a year and 1 million engines in Ohio. So we're really, by output, we're really the largest, largest automaker in Ohio. Wow. Yeah, so a lot of people are surprised by that. And our supply base, we have about 155 Ohio suppliers, about probably in 50 of Ohio's 88 counties. And we're probably buying in excess of $10 billion in parts from those suppliers every year, just parts coming in to be placed in, either in the engines or automobiles that we make. And that's part of a larger North American network of over 600 suppliers, but definitely have a big impact with automotive and the economy of Ohio. And a lot of times, you know, with issues that I'll come in about, most of the time they are directly related to manufacturing or competitive tax codes and strong programs that support manufacturing. And so because of our heavy presence with manufacturing in Ohio, that is kind of the scope of typical issues for me. But we also represent, you know, Honda's other operations, so it might be a sales issue that we come in and talk about, or it might be a product issue. And we try to, you know, work on issues that Ohio's doing that might be unique. For automakers, a lot of times you'll see that we will collectively work on an issue sometimes, and so we'll often team up with fellow lobbyists from Ford, GM, and Fiat Chrysler, or maybe a broader coalition of manufacturers. We work quite a bit with the Ohio Manufacturers Association. That's a strong trade association for us. We're members of the Ohio Chamber. Sometimes we're all working together, you know, with our dealers on issues. Sometimes we have sales-related issues that impact the manufacturer versus the, you know, the sales requirements that we have on our franchisees. So, so as Rick was alluding to, many times the coalitions change. So you might be together on one issue one day, you might be kind of opposed to each other or have slight differences another day. So sometimes the alliances that you think, oh, okay, well, aren't you guys working together on this issue? And then sometimes we have to explain, well, this is a maybe a sales-related issue that the manufacturer has a slightly different viewpoint on than our franchise dealer. But for the most part, again, it's manufacturing-related issues and workforce pipeline-related issues, career training. Those are very important issues to us. As we started, as we were saying, 79 and started our auto plant in 1982 and then 85 with our engine plant and 89 with the other plant. And so now we've had people, a big chunk of our workforce started as young adults when those plants started up. So we are going to be facing more and more, a lot of people going into retirement eligibility and taking retirement. So that is something that we're really focused on. And skilled trades as well. Many people are surprised for us. A lot of people don't realize what a great pay structure and benefits and everything you can have in manufacturing, and it's modern manufacturing. And I would definitely, any of you, regardless of where your districts are, you're welcome to come out and tour our plants anytime you'd like to. I'd be happy to set that up. And it's really a lot different than what is sometimes portrayed in the media. And we have a lot of modern machinery. We're always investing new equipment to make our production lines as efficient as possible. So the skill set required, the equipment is a little bit more complex, and maintaining and installing that equipment can be more complex than maybe it was in our early days. But a lot of people are surprised. I talk to sometimes, and they think of your car manufactured, and you know, have to have advanced levels of education, but production associates, you need a high school diploma as a minimum, and then for our equipment service technicians, the people that install machinery and equipment and troubleshoot that, and that is where it's becoming a little more complex, and for that those jobs, we're really working very closely with our community college partners for two-year degree programs that give mechatronics or electronics and engineering. And then we have a very solid core of degreed engineers that work either on product design or manufacturing engineering. But those are our three basic categories. So we kind of feel we have something for everybody and something for everyone regardless of their education degree of attainment, and there's room for advancement as manufacturing evolves. So I think that just gives you a little bit about Honda and about my background, and we'll answer questions as you might have them as it relates to manufacturing. Cool, thanks.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Suppler, and as announced, I'm the Managing Director of Policy for the County Commissioners Association, and a couple of my current bosses are in the room, as well as a former boss. So I am very lucky to represent over 282 elected officials at the county level, as well as professionals who work for county commissioners, whether it's sanitary engineers, dog wardens, HR professionals, a whole host of issues and services that come to the residents of Ohio. Whether we're talking about the county providing bee inspectors, which when I started this job, I did not know what a bee inspector was called. I didn't know what an apiarist was. To, in some parts of the state, counties do zoning regulations in the unincorporated area. And then there's a whole host of issues in between, such as criminal justice, delivery of human services, workforce development, the commissioners, the council, and the county exec being responsible for setting the budget, raising the taxes and the revenues at the local level. And so what I love about my job is every day is different. And I've been with the County Commissioners Association for over 20 years, and I still feel that I'm learning something. Prior to that, I worked for the Township Association, And prior to that, I was a legislative aide and a page. And it all sort of happened by accident. Between my junior and senior year in college, I wrote both my state rep, Bob Netsley, if any of you know Bob Netsley, and my state senator, Nick Simmers, asking for a job. And I was very fortunate that Senator Simmers had two pages at the time. Both were going home for the summer, and I got to work for him for the summer. Lived in a fraternity house up here at OSU, and had a great time, and fell in love with the state house, fell in love with the process. Got to come back unexpectedly, work as an aide, got to do a couple of big campaigns, became a little jaded, and thought, oh, I don't know if I can do this for a living, because I'm very competitive. And as you guys know, in campaign world, there's no trophy for second place. It's all in, and it's you go big. So I thought I would leave this world and become a pharmacist. So I started to take night classes for about a year and a half while I worked at the State House, as well as for the Township Association at Columbus State, as well as Capital University. So I could apply to OSU's pharmacy school. So I've done anatomy. I skinned the cat that the other lab partners would not skin. They let me name the cat the one campaign manager's name. And going through chem series, physics series, calc series, I discovered how much I really love what I get to do in working with local government officials, both with the Township Association and then eventually the Commissioners Association, as well as with you all at the state level and with the state agencies. And the opportunities it presents to make a difference, but to also meet really great folks, like the folks who are in this room, as well as the folks you guys get to serve on a day-to-day basis. So for me, what gets me jazzed are the people and the opportunities that come along to make a difference and work with all these great people. What I'd like to share, because I think Ricky did a great job sort of talking about the whole misnomer or some of the negativity that goes along with the term of lobbyist, is just hit a few high points, because I know we're standing before lunch and you guys have had three very long days. What I would like to encourage you to do is think of lobbyist as a resource. For some of you who are in the legal profession, you see attorneys as experts who take you through the court process. We as lobbyists see ourselves as professionals who can take you through the legislative, through the rule process, through public policy, to help be a resource, as well as to serve as the best advocates we can for the folks we get to represent. And so I hope that you'll see us as a resource. If you break it down by the numbers, there's over, probably by the time the General Assembly wraps up, over 1,000 bills that will have gotten introduced. And so far to date, of that number, you only have about 130 that have actually become law. And if you look at some of them, they might be naming special days or highways. I mean, you've got this gigantic budget bill in there, and you've got some other really big bills that have a lot of stuff in them. But in terms of getting your ideas and your concepts across the finish line, please think of us and our colleagues in the lobbying community as resources who can help you with information, who can help you get your ideas across the finish line. And yet that's my rose-colored glass spin, because I also recognize sometimes we're not going to be on the same side of the proposals you all are thinking of doing, and maybe you have questions. And so we at least would like the opportunity to share our client's perspective, our information, recognizing, as Ricky pointed out, you don't always agree. And in the end, no one typically gets a whole loaf or a whole trophy. But I think working together, collaborating together, sharing information really ends up with a great process. A lot of times when I'm asked to describe what this world is like. I call it a roller coaster. And I say that affectionately because I think roller coasters are awesome. But in a roller coaster, you have some really big highs, and some days you have some really deep lows. You have a lot of twists and turns and things that can catch you off guard. And just recognize that some days are more challenging than others. Some days you do have those lows. But in the end, it's a really cool opportunity for all of us, you as elected officials, us as public policy professionals, to engage with one another and to do what we get to do, hopefully in an effort to make a difference. The other point I wanted to just encourage is we recognize the importance of communication. We'd rather hear if you're not agreeing with us. We at least want to share perspectives. And I think a lot of us understand we don't get a whole loaf. We don't get everything we ask for. And recognizing how much compromise and how much work goes into a proposal is really, I think, vital in terms of controlling expectations. Two summers ago, I got to teach the lobbying course at Ohio State University, 3-credit-hour course, had a lot of great people come in and talk to the class. And while you go through the textbooks and you hear all this stuff about lobbying and policy making, it sounds really easy on paper, and it sounds really cool on paper. But until you get into those situations where there is not enough money to go around, or not everybody is going to come out with 100% of what they're asking for, do I think you really get the intensity and the flavor for how difficult some of these positions are? So I wish you well. I'll stop there. And again, thank you for your time and everything you guys do. And look forward to hearing the ideas you have, because I'm sure while you guys were knocking on doors, you've all have ideas in terms of what you want to introduce and what you want to see move forward in the next couple months.
Be happy to take questions. Perfect.
Okay, so my question is, I'm a good question person. Okay, what are some of the ideas that you guys are thinking about introducing?
They can't tell us.
How about retiring term limits for 64-year-old lobbyists? My wife would like that.
What would you name it? Do I get to work for the best local elected officials?
I just wanted to, I was thinking about this example as Rick was talking, and then Cheryl brought up Bob Netsley, longtime House member. So some of you will remember this, but Rick was talking about, you know, try to forge friendships, maybe get out of your comfort zones and meet other members, but probably about, 10 or 15 years ago, Representative Netsley was, mm-hmm. You can probably describe him better than I since you worked for him, but a conservative, longtime House member.
He was head of what they called the Caveman Caucus in those days.
Yeah, being more direct.
I didn't get to work for him, but he represented our area.
Right,
but
okay.
He got you into it.
Very classic legislator, conservative area. Couldn't be more different from somebody that he ended up forming a fast friendship with, just mm-hmm. so that they could explore each other's areas and perspectives. So he became friends with Representative Barbara Boyd, I believe it was, from Cleveland, a Democrat from metropolitan Cleveland. And they spent time in each other's districts and really got to kind of know each other's perspective and became fast friends. And it was, one of those cases of, sort of disparate viewpoints and perspectives, but they became very close and I think kind of forged some compromises and different perspectives on legislation as after they kind of did that, and I don't know exactly how that got formed, but it was very interesting to watch over time. So I urge you to kind of do that and get to know your fellow members that you might not otherwise think you have anything in common or would want to work on anything with them.
And you know, the election is now in our rearview mirror, sort of, but it won't be long before the next election starts. And although we're here to talk about public policy and how lobbyists operate, one of the things that many of our organizations do is support candidates of both political parties to help get good people elected to government. And the concepts of relationship building that I discussed earlier will go a long way towards building those relationships so that when I get a call from a constituent or a company that I represent that's in your district and said, you know, Representative or Senator so-and-so is a really a good person, we should try to help them get reelected again. It makes it a lot easier to go back to our organizations who are under significant pressure to raise money for candidates, to go to the people who are hearing from their local people. So when we hear from your local constituents of the job you're doing, it shouldn't be high on Broad Street. It's really helpful to have Main Street as you look towards the next election cycle and the harsh realities of getting elected.
So what have been some of your guys' experience so far with lobbyists? Some of the lobbyists go out, try to meet with you during campaign season. Do you like that? Do you not like that?
Mm-hmm. But also the welcoming of, you know, them being a resource when I came to the State House. It was just a friendly conversation, as Richard said. You know, mm-hmm. So meeting with them getting to know me getting to know them. So when I'm up here, I can actually understand who I'm talking to, mm-hmm. not having to worry about if they're going to trip me up or things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So that relationship was important. So I actually encouraged it. I even reached out to some of the lobbyists and called some of the organizations just to find out, you know, who would respond. Mm-hmm. So
they came to our office one day, and I was doing air, had a ball cap and blue jeans on, and I walked in. I didn't realize he was coming to visit the guys in the office, and I strolled in and didn't know who this guy was from a hole in the wall. And next thing you know, we had a nice conversation.
I really appreciated the ones who swung through my district to meet with me instead of me having to come down here, because I'll drop an hour and 40 minutes to sit down, 45 mm-hmm. minutes with somebody. And so that was really nice when they do a tour to a couple of, I really appreciate that. Because we're not in office yet, right? So we don't have really a place to park it. And so that was really nice.
What else did folks like when you had visits? Yeah. That's true.
The word lobbyist is mm-hmm. a little scary for new people in that but what I found was that they were very informative about things I didn't know anything about. You know, I didn't know about the Council on Aging and, or, you know, places like that. And so I really appreciated the information they gave me. The one thing I always told lobbyists, and I would encourage my colleagues also to do this because they seem to appreciate this, was that I'll never lie to you.
Can you speak up just a little?
Yeah, sorry,
that's okay.
One of the things that was most helpful to me, kind of being from a larger district, is there are so many people, even during the course of the campaign, that you just don't get to know, whether it's a business owner or someone who's running an organization or someone who's involved in
That's a good point.
One of the things we can do as well for you is if you're thinking about a nugget of an idea before you even put it on paper or introduce a bill, we can help bring together some folks, experts in the field, to help you think through and talk through it and give you that. And because the more work you do in advance, because once a bill gets introduced, people pick sides. And so what you can on many issues. So if you can maybe massage some of those issues and anticipate, it'll help move that process more quickly through the General Assembly if you address some of those issues even before you have a bill actually with a bill number on it. We work on a lot of bills that have no bill number. They've been drafted by LSC, and there are nuances and things that just sometimes are just the littlest things, because people react. You can have a huge brouhaha over a couple of words. And if you can anticipate that in advance as you work through, as you look at our client list, I'm not an expert in waste management facilities, fracking, healthcare. I have enough knowledge to be good enough to get by. However, I know where the experts are, and we can partner them. In addition, hey, Rick, who are the other people in that industry I should be talking to? So that you'll get the right people in the room to give you the information you need to begin to massage those ideas that are important to your communities on a broader statewide basis.
Right, and I would echo that. It does help build that trust, and I can think of a bill that we just had a big interested party meeting, and it had already been introduced, and really the consensus of everybody that were stakeholders was that this piece of legislation really wasn't needed, and nobody had really clamored or asked for it, and it's better. In the end, in hindsight, would have been better to have that conversation before a bill got dropped and had a bill number. Now it's kind of late in the session, so it's not going to go anywhere. But it would have been better to have that kind of in advance and just get some of those trial balloon feedback and see if there really was, a clamoring or a constituency group that really thought, that piece of legislation was needed.
And I don't know how many of you in your spare time have gone through the lobbying list on JLEC just to see what corporations and organizations have representatives in Ohio and interests. It would give you a field of vision, a field of vision out there, and also connect it to your local community, because you may have a chemical plant in your district and you may not be aware of the Ohio Chemical Council, and tie those connections to your local. Again, I'm big on the local community, because I can be the best lobbyist in the world, but boy, when I get patted on the shoulder and they say, Rick, but I'm not hearing from my people at home, that doesn't help my cause. But boy, it sure helps me when they say, you're right. God, I heard that from 7 people last week at church. I didn't realize that was bubbling up right now.
What was that list again?
It's a JLEC list. It's the Joint Legislative Ethics Commission list. It's right online. If you go to the Ohio General Assembly, Ohio Legislature website, there'll be a link to it. And in fact, I believe Tony Bledsoe, who's the chief officer, will be speaking to you next. And you can scroll through. It's thousands. But in a short period of time, you just scroll through just to give you a field of vision of the kind of organizations and groups, corporations, associations that are listed there. You're not going to probably know the names of the individuals, because there'll be a whole nother list with you. Go to Rick Eich and you'll have all the organizations and companies that we represent listed under my name. So if you happen to know my name, you can go to my name, click on it, and it'll list Anthem, Waste Management, United Airlines, so forth and so on. But you can also go to the business list, and it'll start with the AAA Association, to Apple, to you go down to the Zebra.
Yeah, it's a really helpful tool.
Yeah, it'll give you a feel.
Do it by name or by company, and then you can figure out who goes with who.
What type of warnings would Tony Bledsoe tell us about lobbyists?
Stay away from Rick Eich.
The old line. The old line is, don't tell my mother I'm a lobbyist. She thinks I'm a piano player in a brothel. I like to say I'm a public servant on a private payroll.
But to answer your question, I think Tony would encourage you to make sure that expenditures are reported and that you have that relationship. He'll talk about the de minimis amount where lobbyists can spend up to $50 a calendar year. They report the number in aggregate without a name but lobbyists have to file 3 reports with his agency that then are scanned and put online for everyone to see relative to what bills the lobbyists are engaging in and what funds the lobbyist or their employer are spending to further their cause as well. He's a good guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Timely filing of reports, I think that's key. And timely filing of those required reports, I think that's a key.
Because sometimes there'll be events that our firm has a conference every 2 years after the election called the Impact Ohio Post-Election Conference, where we bring everybody together, we call it a healing. Where we had 700 people on November 10th after this election, where we had the heads of the Howard Republican Party, the Democratic Party, we had Aaron Pickerel, who ran Hillary Clinton's campaign, we had Governor Kasich's campaign manager, we had members of the cabinet, the budget director, human services director, we had panel discussions on emerging issues, on a multiple of factors. We had the legislative leaders speak. We had a media panel. But the cost of that event is $125, and that's over the gift limit. So a number of legislators want to come to that program, and we work with Tony to make sure we have a letter to inform the legislators that we would love to have you come in for free. Unless you're on a panel, you have to pay. So what we then do is some members write the $125 check. Some don't mind us reporting from the success group, $125 in-kind contribution to that legislator, and we just file, you and I both file that, and it stands the light of day. 700 people in the room, it wasn't like we were in Las Vegas together. We were at the convention center down the street here. So those are the kinds of things you want to be careful, because you'll get invited to things. I could tell you stories that turn your hair like mine about what went on 30 years ago, from sea to shining sea. And a lot of it wasn't underhanded. It was just we'd go to a meeting and we'd go out to dinner and you didn't worry about a $50 de minimis cost. And members would bring their wives and we'd go in 2 days ahead and they'd pay their own hotel rooms and we could pay for meals and things like golf. But we had some greedy people spoil the process for everybody. And now the rules are the rules. And Tony Bledsoe I stick close to Tony. Because no member's going to move a bill or client's going to pay me enough to take care of my family. So I'm very careful. And my clients, if I'm in the front page of a newspaper on an ethics, even a question, not even if I did something wrong, these big corporations who run the big stock market don't like reading those things. And I have clients that make me sign personal liability on things that if I do something, here's the consequences. So. Take the ethics stuff very seriously. And it's not that hard. Because a lot of times we go to the Little Palace and get a hamburger and a couple of drinks. We're not buying, it's not the members that used to go into a golf pro shop and buy $400 worth of rain gear and a couple golf clubs and put it on your tab like they did in the 70s and 80s. Now we'll go out to dinner. And if you're with lobbyists and feel more comfortable buying your own dinner, we understand that. We have members that say, hey, I just assume do that. Or I'll say to a friend, I'm at $45 on you. You better have a glass of water and a couple of pretzels. But they're your friends. And sometimes you buy for them. It doesn't have to be as adversarial if you don't make it that way.
Go ahead, Rick.
I'll be the one to ask shameless fundraising questions, I guess.
Cool.
Do you guys have any tips for us as legislators? I mean, a lot of us are raising money all this time. Are there certain I don't know if you have any just general guidance or tips or do's and don'ts.
When the caucus doesn't have 8 events in a night and you physically can't get to 6 of your friends who are having the events at the same time between 5:30 and 7, that's a problem. And fundraising has gotten so immense that, and this isn't an R&D thing, it's that on given nights they'll have 7 or 8 fundraisers all over town, and you can't physically get to all the events. I hearken back to what I said earlier. I don't think you need necessarily to have events sometimes, because there are so many events where people just throw it at the wall and see who shows up. And sometimes the cost of the events that they put on, there are less people there than the cost of the event. you develop the personal relationships with people and industries based upon your local relationships, your state relationships with people like us, we're more apt to contribute than go to another fundraiser from 5 to 7. Now, fundraisers are important, I get all that. But the money, the pressure, you've got to have these relationships. I mean, obviously, I harp on it. And it just doesn't relate to policy. It relates to the challenges of getting elected in today's world, and that's raising money. But you've got to have a relationship with people, because with 130 people asking you for money, and the leaders asking you for more money than, you know, you give the money to the leaders, and then they want you to give to the members, and you tell them, well, wait, I gave all the money to you because the leaders want the money. So it's complicated, but relationships.
The other dynamic I would add is just there are lobbyists like my shop and other shops that do not have a PAC. And so we'll get the calls and we'll explain how we appreciate you thinking of us. We at Local Government Association World are paid more like public employees as opposed to maybe private sector. So we don't have the cushion or the margin to pay for a whole bunch of fundraising tickets. It's just the life reality. And so what some lawmakers have been very generous with folks in my realm is they still invite us to the events. They want people to come. They appreciate the help we provide. And one nice senator has actually nicknamed our shop his PE group, which stands for his profit eaters. So he always wants us to come to Club 185 and have a cheeseburger and a soda or a beverage, because he appreciates everything that goes into the mix and recognizes we don't have a PAC.
And not every business or corporation has one either. Ours included, we don't have a PAC. So Rick's got all the money here.
Well, yeah,
he's a fun guy. Invite him to all your events.
I mean, if you go to the lists,
he's a good dancer too.
If you go to the lists every week, and you see, you know, sometimes there are 20 fundraisers in a week, and the worst part is that some of them are your friends. You know, you go to a fundraiser. Some of my best friends vote against me. And I go to their fundraisers because I support them as individuals because they're doing stuff for their community. I know that sounds Pollyannish, but, you know, we do those things. So develop their personal relationships. You can have a fundraiser in multiple different ways, but you've got to have those relationships with people. And obviously groups like ours, we have some PACs in our group, so we do contribute. But work the halls, work your friends, work with people, and you'll find this process works okay sometimes.
And I have one last resource before Mark cuts us off. But in addition to those JLEC lists, I think something that's helpful to you or your staffs is many of us are members of the Ohio Lobbying Association. And it's just, you know, kind of a group, a practice group that we're all members of. And you pay to be a member of this group. But one of the things the Lobbying Association does is they have a directory that has everyone that's a member listed. So the JLEC lists are inclusive of everybody, but the Lobbying Association is a lot of the sort of common lobbyists that you would see day to day, has pictures in this directory. So it's helpful for you guys being new to Capitol Square, and then you can put the name with the organization. So I think that's a helpful resource if you can get a copy of that Ohio Lobbying Directory. The Ohio Lobbying Association.
So they typically will forward and send you hard copies once you get down here. Their website is ohiolobby.org.
It's a good resource.
Mm-hmm. Don't hesitate if we can be of any help to you at any time.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you very much to our three panelists.